Good morning, everybody. It's great to have everybody here today. We've got a number of bills that we'll be hearing today, members and audience. Thank you for coming in to the Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy meeting for March 4th, 2025. I'd like to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. Vice Chair Mecklen, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from February 27th? And if you would, please make a motion to move that forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have reviewed the minutes for Thursday, February 27th, and I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the minutes or changes, thoughts? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Minutes are carried. Today, members, all bills that we'll be hearing today are going to be laid over for further future consideration. The chair will be stepping away as I'll be co-presenting with Representative Bierman up in Human Services today. So I'm going to step away for a little bit here, and Chair Mecklen will be stepping in today. So I'd like to welcome House File 1004, Representative Sexton. Welcome to the Committee of Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development.
Thank you, Chair.
With that, we'll get you started.
You guys can help with the props.
Thank you.
Morning, Mr. Chair. My pilot eyes are not what they used to be 25 years ago. So, may I proceed?
You may. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members of the Labor and Workforce Development Finance Committee and Policy Committee. I'm Representative Tom Sexton from House District 19B. That would be down in Medford, Owatonna, Meriden, and of course my hometown of Waseca. I proudly wear my veteran's pin as a 26-plus year U.S. Air Force veteran, where I served in many parts of the world and retired in 2012 as a full colonel. I wanted to start a whole new career. A lot of people kind of keep doing what they're doing from a military career, but I wanted to get into the construction industry. So I took some courses and then was able to be hired by Enbridge Energy up in Duluth as a construction project manager. At the time, I was not aware of helmets to hard hats, so I kind of sought out on my own and broke into the career. However, we kind of are a tight-knit group as veterans, so when I got on the job site, was working with a lot of the people who are on the job site, a lot more veterans, and they really took me under their wing, and helped me succeed in that career. So much so that in 2017, I was hired away from Enbridge, which I truly love still, and took on the role of a VP of Field Services down in Houston, Texas, for a company called Universal Pegasus International. And we actually supported Enbridge with our engineering services. And then moved up to VP of Construction Management, and then retired again in 2021. While in Houston, though, I became involved really with veterans again. The American Petroleum Institute had a workforce development committee, which I joined, and took on the role of helping veterans get into our career field from a more strategic role. At that point, that's where I met Helmets to Hard Hats, led part of that committee, had different meetings, and we got more and more veterans into our new career field. This is an awesome organization. They leverage the very experienced workforce, our veterans, who just need to learn some new skill sets, and they help them with that. Employers recognize the benefits of hiring veterans as well. Veterans want to work, veterans know how to build teams, veterans know how to lead, and they know how to adjust to changing conditions, which is always going on in the construction job site. And they know how to achieve goals. And the goals are a little bit different, but they really focus on schedule when it comes to construction, because if your team is not performing, it slows everybody else down and causes a lot of challenges. Our veterans also want to be part of a team. They want to mentor new members, like the veterans that reached out to me and helped me learn my new career. Those are their battle buddies. Veterans want to show families that, hey, I built that, because in traveling around the world, I can never show my family the things I accomplished, but now, traveling around the United States, we may get off the freeway and go see one of the pump stations I built. Yes, I'm passionate about the topic of veterans. They are a huge and rarely fully tapped resource for our nation in Minnesota. I would like to note that Helmets to Hard Hats enjoys very strong bipartisan support from the legislature and from our employers. As this is my first bill, I am pleased that 21 co-authors, some of which are in this room, from both sides of the aisle, have already signed on to this bill, and I hope many more will join soon. In addition, I would like to recognize Representative Matt Norris, who carried this bill in 2023, and he agreed to be the chief co-author of this bill as well. Finally, I'd like to thank those of you in this room who have already signed on this bill, Representative Ben Bakeberg, Representative Caleb Berg, Representative Wayne Johnson, Representative Pete Johnson, Representative Isaac Schultz, and Representative Natalie Zelezikar. Next, I am pleased to introduce one of my fellow veterans, Stephen Stengel. Thank you. Great to meet you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you would identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Stengel. Thank you for having me here today. I just wanted to talk a little bit about basically my career in the military and then how it's helped me in the workforce so far. So I joined the Army National Guard in 2015, following the footsteps of my dad and my grandfather. Served until 2022. After that, I went on to work at several different jobs, not making a livable wage. And then I learned about the union, Carpenter's Apprenticeship, and that is what I'm in now. I'm an apprentice. I'm in my fourth year. I work for the City of Minneapolis Water Department. And a program like Helmets to Hard Hats is a great program for veterans because, like he was saying earlier, a lot of the people that I work with never served in the military, so they don't have a work ethic like I want them to sometimes, and it gets frustrating. But military guys, they always get it going. They work really hard. They know their stuff, and they don't like to mess around. You know, we like to say hurry up and wait in the military, and so we get it done quick. And if there's a little time to relax afterwards, that's what we do. But a program like that has helped a lot of my fellow brothers and sisters, and I'd like to see it continue to do that. I think that it does a lot of good things. So,
Mr. Roast, if you'd like to identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Ross. I am the director of the Minnesota Helmets to Hard Hats program. I'm a sheet metal worker by trade, and I am a Marine veteran. So I know what it's like to come home from military service and have to restart your life. Being an infantryman is a great honor when you're in service, and when you get out, not necessarily looked upon as the most hireable position that you could have had in the military. You come home with a lot of soft skills, but not necessarily the technical skills that people are looking for. A program like Helmets to Hard Hats helps bridge that gap. We help them understand the value of what their service meant, what they have for soft skills, and then we help employers and trades and training centers, apprenticeship programs, understand the value of hiring people that have the amazing soft skills that our veterans have. When I was in the military, I went to a lot of places, did a lot of things. I got married. I had my first child. And when I came home, I had to support them. I had to find a way to be financially supportive of my family. That's not an easy thing to do when you come home and nobody seems to want to hire you because of your past 4 years of military service. Everybody wants to hire veterans, but some people just can't because they don't understand what their skills are. Registered apprenticeship is the best way for these service members to go. For me, that doubt that I had during that time when I was looking for work, when I was looking for a new career, it was the most stressful for me. And what I've learned in this position, working with different mental health institutions, is that that is usually the time where we see the lowest of lows for service members. Things like PTSD, depression, seem to rear its ugly head more when you have the stress of financial hardship over your head. Registered apprenticeship helps eliminate that. It gives them a set pathway, a way to go through it, beginning and end, and a light at the end of the tunnel. It breaks it down for exactly how many hours you're going to be in school, what you need to do on the job site, and it gives you reasonable wages along the way. Most of the individuals that are going into the trades right now are looking at making $50,000 to $60,000 in year one. When they get done with their apprenticeship, many of them will make over $100,000 a year. This is not just a job, it is a livable career for these individuals. On top of that, the trades are a very welcoming place. When I got to the trades, I was a little nervous going on the job site for the first time, but I realized the camaraderie out on the job site was just like it was in my Marine platoon. We were able to have a good time and enjoy working. We worked hard because we knew that was the gig. You show up, you work hard, you go home to your family, you provide for your family, you live the American dream. That's what we were trying to do. The Helmets to Hard Hats program, this year, you'll see in the packets that you were given, there's a couple of testimonials, one by Zach Johnson, who has had many roles inside of the veteran community. He has a unique perspective of looking through some of our partnered groups we work with, like MACV, DEED. He was a career forest DEVOP. He works at Department of Disabled American Veterans now. He was also a county veteran service officer. He sees our veterans all the time. He's seen them in all states of life, and Helmets to Hard Hats has helped him with all of the places he worked at get veterans he meets to work. You'll also see that this year, I wish I had like a full report for you, but this year we're still doing our count for what we did in 2024. But you'll see that we had over 200, we had 278 veterans sign up for the program. They received information about the trades in their area. So we do this regionally. If somebody lives in Duluth, they receive information about registered apprenticeship in Duluth. If they're here in the Twin Cities, they receive the information here. We try and make it as easy for them as possible to understand what's going on in their area so that they don't end up trying to track a job where they have to drive a couple hours to get there. They receive sample testing and preparatory materials to get ready to go into that trade, and then any insight information that we can give them, including pathways that Helmets to Hard Hats creates with that trade. On top of that, we're over 1,500 service members in the program since it began here in Minnesota alone. And I can proudly tell you that we helped 40 veterans. Now, this is the number we had at the time of this sheet coming out. We are closer to 47, but like I said, I like to wait for confirmed numbers from the National Helmets to Hard Hats before I get too high and mighty. That effort, 40 veterans this year, leads us that we have over 270 veterans total that we've helped put into careers. Like I said, starting wages of around $50,000 to $60,000. And making over $100,000 by the end of year 4 or 5. On top of that, we've had an impact in the community. Helmets to Hard Hats was recognized as the 2023 Minneapolis VA Vocational Rehabilitation Community Partner of the Year. And I'd like to pass this around so you all can see it up close. Thank you, Chris. And we continue to just serve the veteran community as much as we can. So with that, I'm open to questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Mr. Rose, for that. I've heard this bill, I think this is the fourth time in this committee, and it appears that it's an excellent pathway to get the veterans on into the trades, which we all know we need more of, right? So with that, I'm going to move to member questions, and it looks like Representative Pinto has a question or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So actually, so one just preliminary thing. I don't know that there was a motion to bring the bill before us. I know it's going to get laid over, but just so it's kind of officially before us, I can't make that motion. It was Representative Berg who reminded me. Maybe she can just move it to bring it before us, unless I missed that, Mr. Chair.
Lead Pinto, Chair Baker made that.
Oh, he did.
Before he left, yes.
Oh, we must. All right. Sorry. So Representative Berg and I, we missed that. Okay. Sorry, Mr. Chair. And then many thanks to all three of you. Representative Sexton, you and I haven't had the chance to connect much, but thanks to you and to your testifiers for your service to our country. I'm grateful to you. This bill has the distinction of being having achieved a double Johnson, which I've just made up. Where you've got both Pete Johnson and Wayne Johnson, which is an impressive feat. So when you've achieved a double Johnson, you know that you've done very well. And my only comment is just there's been some discussion, I'm not sure if Representative Sexton, if you would have seen this or your testifiers, about moving in the direction in the legislature of having more competitive grants rather than direct appropriations for a number of reasons. And so simply wanted to, and this seems like such a terrific program, and so I so much appreciate it, and would encourage you, and I'll be doing this to other presenters of other bills as well, when there are direct appropriations to individual organizations, to just consider there's a wide variety of grant programs within DEED. So are there programs that might fit with some language changes. Maybe the program as constituted right now doesn't fit, because certainly this is a very valuable thing for us to be funding, and we want to make sure we're doing it in the right way. And so if in the end in our budget that's a direction that we do go, Representative Greenman and Schultz and I are all on a committee that met yesterday regarding agency oversight, where that was a significant theme that we heard, is the desire to go that way. We just want to make sure if we're putting together the budget that we're in position that you could make sure that you've got access to funding, even if it wasn't going to be a direct grant to Helmets to Hard Hats. So that's all the comment, and thank you, Chair. And again, thanks to all three of you for your work.
Are there any other member questions? Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank all three of you for your service. Representative Greenman and I, when we came in our first year, the Labor Committee was combined with the Military and Veteran Affairs Committee, and that was just my absolute favorite committee, my favorite way to combine all of those things, because truly those are our values, right? Our taking care of our veterans, taking care of our workers. This is a unique way to sort of give back to those of you who gave so much to us. So I will always sign on to this bill, always support it. Thank you so much for bringing this forward.
And Representative Zlozdikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. This is a fantastic bill for not only veterans, but for the state of Minnesota to have hardworking, dedicated, honorable people return home and after their service time and be able to get in the trades and help us build our communities with high-paying jobs. And so thank you, and I'm happy to see the success. Thank you.
And with that, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. And thank you for this wonderful stories. Oh, and Representative Sexton, do you have any final closing?
No, I appreciate all the support. It's great to see the bipartisan support as a veteran. And I'm sure both gentlemen will agree that it's really great to be welcomed home and supported not only in our communities, but with all of the different things that we can do to help veterans transition back in. I mean, starting a new career when you're 49 is a little daunting, especially you've got kids in college and things like that. So I just appreciate the support and want to continue to support all the veteran programs that we have. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, this will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Chair.
And now we are going to move House File 1439. It'll be moved for laid over for possible inclusion as well. Representative Bakeberg. Representative Bakeberg, if you would care to tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Meckland, members of the committee. My name is Ben Bakeberg. I have the privilege to serve the communities of Prior Lake, Jordan, portion of Shakopee, and the surrounding townships. I'm here today to present House File 1439, which provides funding for the successful Minnesota Grocers Association Carts to Career Initiative, which is a statewide initiative to promote careers within the food service, the food industry. Carts to Career has been funded by the legislature since 2019. House File 1439 is seeking $750,000 per year appropriation out of the Workforce Development Fund to the Grocers Association, which has administered this program successfully along with DEED since 2019. As this committee is well aware, workforce shortages are an ongoing problem in nearly every industry, and it's great to hear other industries talking about their successful programs. And the retail food industry is no exception. Employers are desperate for employees that are looking for innovative ways to attract and also retain them. The Carts to Career program is an example of one of these innovations. as a global leader in the food industry, is a major component of our state's economic success, viability, and stability. The food chain runs deep in Minnesota, with food manufacturers, distributors, and retailers providing one out of every 20 jobs. The industry is known for providing first-time jobs. One of my first jobs was working on the farm, our family farm, and then also working at the produce department in our local grocery store. These jobs are imperative to building the foundation of our next generation's future. What sometimes gets overlooked is the fantastic lifetime careers that the industry provides. However, with current and projected workforce shortages, it's critically important that we back our Main Street businesses by supporting educational opportunities to establish growth and success in the next generation of food industry leaders. To help address this ongoing challenge in recruiting workers, the proposal also includes a couple new features: hiring workers with disabilities, and for the recruitment of employees that have been previously incarcerated. As you will hear from my testifiers, this is a proven and successful program and provides a good investment in our state. Our first testifier will be Steve Bartle, Director of Government Relations from the Minnesota Grocers Association.
Thank you. If you would just identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Steve Bartle. I am Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Grocers Association. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today about House File 1439. I am here on behalf of the MGA's sister organization, the Minnesota Grocers Association Foundation. Established in 1992, our foundation provides tuition grants, scholarships, and supports community efforts, and has since expanded to include workforce development initiatives and career advancement programs. As Representative Bakeberg said, our industry provides one out of every 20 jobs in our great state. Our member companies employ both union and non-union workers. Part of the mission of the MGA is to highlight that these aren't just jobs. They're excellent opportunities for long-term careers with competitive pay and benefits. We represent Main Street, Minnesota, with hundreds of hometown grocers and convenience stores, many of which are multi-generational and locally owned. We want to thank Representative Bakeberg for being chief author on House File 1439 and acknowledge the support of our co-authors, Representative Frazier, Representative Perryman, and Representative Ray Rauer. We are deeply appreciative of their backing of our Cards to Careers program, which has maintained strong bipartisan support since 2019. Cards to Careers is a multi-pronged approach to expanding the industry's workforce. This is a proven program that has been utilized to build on our existing workforce, helping individuals develop sustainable, fulfilling careers. Our goal is to provide a path for employees to gain the skills needed to advance into high-level engaging positions. I'd also like to emphasize to the committee that all programs under the Carts to Careers umbrella require matching support from employers or sponsoring companies, an important factor that contributes to the program's success. Carts to Careers began in 2019 with funding provided through DEED. Our flagship initiative, the Retail Management Certificate Program, was developed in partnership with Alexandria Technical and Community College. This nationally recognized online educational platform helps participants gain the skills needed to take on leadership roles with their employers. The Retail Management Certificate is an 8-course, 2-year program with transferable credits that can be applied toward a 2 or 4-year degree. For an industry that employs a significant number of workers without a college degree, this program offers an invaluable opportunity for career advancement. By next year, we expect that the Retail Management Certificate Program will reach 100 graduates statewide, with another cohort start to begin in the spring. In response to industry labor shortages, in 2023, we developed additional educational programs to address gaps in the supply chain. One such program is our Transportation and Driving course, designed for warehouse workers seeking to advance their careers. This course equips students with the skills needed to earn a highly sought-after CDL driving certification. We've also partnered with Ridgewater Community College in Willmar to utilize their meat cutting program. This initiative is supported by funds from the legislature and the Department of Agriculture, aiming to address the growing shortage of trained meat cutters. Additionally, we are looking to expand the program this year to include the hiring and training support for two essential groups of workers that have proven invaluable for our industry. Funds from the Carts to Career program would now help employers recruit individuals with disabilities and those re-entering the workforce after incarceration, helping them secure meaningful employment. The flexible hours and variety of tasks in grocery stores make it an ideal work environment for individuals with disabilities. Those who have the privilege of working with these exceptional individuals can attest to the positive and inclusive culture they foster in the workplace. We've also heard from our food producer members that they've experienced significant success in hiring formerly incarcerated workers. This has proven to be a successful strategy for employers grappling with workforce shortages, while also providing returning workers with stability and the sense of purpose they need to reintegrate after incarceration. So thank you to the committee for considering the continued investment into the Carts to Careers program. We have brought two testifiers with us today that have benefited from this program. So we have Andrew Acapone from McIntunes here, and then we have another testifier available via Zoom.
Thank you for that. Yes, the next testifier will be Kendra Nath via Zoom. If you could identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Kendra Nath. I graduated from the Retail Management Program in 2021. I am excited to tell you about my experience with the program. What I really liked about the program was I was able to work full-time while taking classes. The class I benefited the most from was the communication class. It helped me communicate with coworkers and with customers. I started working at Teal's Market when I was 15 years old. I started out as a cashier. When I was 18, I got promoted to a shift manager. After I graduated high school, I got another promotion to department manager. I got asked about this program a few years later, and I was willing to do it because I was able to work full-time and take my classes online. Classes were very easy to take. Teachers were very understanding that you are a full-time worker and a student. Now I am an assistant store manager at Teal's Market in Cold Spring, Minnesota. I cannot thank this program enough for helping me get this far. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee for your time. I hope you will consider supporting this valuable program.
Thank you for that. Our next testifier will be Andrew. I'll let you say the last name, if you wouldn't mind. But identify yourself and please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Acapong. I am currently a registered dietitian with McIntunes Fine Foods, and I am enrolled in the Doctor in Clinical Nutrition program at the University of Kansas Medical Center, and I'm set to graduate this May. The COVID-19 pandemic sparked a surge in consumer interest in health, leading to a dramatic increase in demand for nutrition supplements. I realized my education and previous experiences had not fully prepared me to meet this growing need. Attempts to bridge the gap through webinars and conferences proved insufficient. The past couple of years, my spouse and I were navigating the adoption of our 12-year-old son, which would make affording higher education a great hurdle to overcome. The Carts to Careers program and their partnership with McIntunes Fine Foods allowed me to pursue higher education to become a better registered dietitian for the changing consumer landscapes. Courses such as A Nutrition Approach to Inflammation and Immune Regulation, Introduction to Dietetics and Integrative Medicine, and Pharmacology have broadened my ability to assist consumers beyond dietary recommendations for conditions like diabetes and high cholesterol. Additionally, classes like U.S. Public Health Nutrition, Advanced Nutrition Communications, and Health Behavior Counseling have provided insights into integrating health theories into business models. One practical application of this knowledge was a collaboration with PepsiCo Quaker Oats for American Heart Health Month. I used the health belief model within a marketing funnel framework to promote oat consumption among individuals with high cholesterol. The company saw a 173% increased profit in Quaker Oats from this one-month project when compared to the same month last year to reduce high cholesterol among consumers. My participation in the program has been instrumental in my growth as a registered dietitian within the retail industry. I have significantly developed my leadership skills, which now includes supporting a team to deliver outstanding health and wellness experiences through food sampling. Additionally, I have honed my ability to collaborate with department managers to create innovative displays, compelling advertisements, and bring in new products that meet consumer health needs. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for your time, and I hope you will consider supporting this valuable program.
Thank you for that. Do we have any member questions? Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bakeberg, for bringing this. Again, when we're talking about providing opportunities for people to either get a start in some of their first jobs or if they find a career that they love in this, I support it. I love it. I do have a question, though. So the testifier, I apologize for forgetting your name. You mentioned that you work with both union and non-union entities. And so we know that, for example, Cub Foods oftentimes are union, Lunds and Byerly's. And so they kind of have the ability through their collective bargaining agreement to bargain for wages and benefits, whether it's healthcare or some sort of benefits package. So I'm wondering if the author would be amenable to language that would say participants of this program must provide their workers with family-sustaining wages and health care, if that's something that you would be willing to put into the bill so that as we're doling out these precious dollars for programs that all warrant our attention and are all valuable, we make sure that we are providing that long-term benefits for workers, because just hearing the helmets to hard hats and talking about how they walked right into a $50, $60, $70, $80,000 job with the trades, we want to make sure that a program like this is also competitive and are giving people that ability to support their family in these careers that they love. So is the author amenable to that language? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bakeberg or Mr. Stengel, whichever.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Steve Bartle with the Minnesota Grocers Association. I think we're open to discussions. As you mentioned, our industry is, especially here in the metro, a very has a high percentage of union workforce and union stores. So would be open to the conversation. The one concern I would have would potentially be as we are trying to get some of these younger, potentially only part-time folks who may be as part of their CBA don't necessarily apply, or I should say, get all of the benefits, right, as a part-time worker. So I wouldn't want to exclude those folks from this program as we're trying to get them in, but I think we would be certainly open to having more conversations about it.
Representative Bakeberg?
I think I'll just be very honest. I'm always open to having conversations, and then we just have to make a decision based off of the totality of the impact of any anything that we add to a bill. So always happy, Representative Berg, to have ongoing conversations. Yes.
Representative Berg, a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. And I hear you about not wanting to exclude anybody, and that's why we're having sort of this discussion about which programs we're going to fund. We obviously want to fund ones that make a deep impact in the community and are reaching workers, but then we want to make sure that we're taking care of workers. So I understand what you're saying about part-time workers. Sometimes that's like an excuse to not take care of those workers too. So really just appreciative to be able to have the conversation about how we take care of all of our workers. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just another comment, Mr. Chair and Representative Berg, thank you. And I would just want to point out that all of these dollars and all of these funds are directly meant to aid employees, right? These are programs to help with the advancement of the employees. So like I said, we would be happy to have further conversations. Thank you.
And Lead Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. And I think what Representative Berg was referring to, or just was prompting that, in part, was the letter that is in packets from UFCW. And I will just maybe note, we had several members who didn't have it in their paper packets. I think just an omission, I know, posted online. I happen to have it in mine. But the letter references not only family-sustaining jobs with health care benefits, but also organizations, companies with no history of labor violations. I guess I would just offer as well that as we're deciding in the end, putting the budget together, and I know, appreciate Representative Baker, what you had to say, and Mr. Bartle as well, that that might be something I think that, that would be important to a number of us as we're considering kind of final budget. Because I do think that UFCW is making a good point that if we're going to put funds in, we want to make sure that they're going into those companies that are going to be really putting people on a path to prosperity, to workers, and obviously not having a history of labor violations. Two things, though. One is the language in the bill, second to last sentence begins at the very end of line 1.10. We just noticed, and I should note that I think this is a program that's received consistent funding for quite a while and worked really well, so thank you for that. This sentence we just noticed had not been in previous versions, and if you could just sort of talk about what it's about, that saying amount may also be used for training and development costs, certifications, other activities, because that's not something we had noticed in prior appropriations to this.
Mr. Bartle?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto, thank you. I think the idea between trying to have some of that language is when we look at programs that get beyond kind of what I would say the original scope, which was, right, this program started with, it was only the retail management certificate program. And as we've built and sort of identified some of those holes within workforce or the supply chain, when we're talking about the meat cutters, or also the CDL drivers, right? We just want to make it so that the program is flexible or like Andrew's program so that funds would be available beyond just the specific retail management certificate program. All these funds do, if someone comes to us with an idea of a way that they want to help one of their employees through an educational program or a training, right? We do work with DEED through an administrator to make sure that the funds would qualify or that that specific purpose that a member would want to use it for is applicable under this. So I think that's the idea of we just want to make sure that we are able to touch as many folks and help as many employees as possible.
Okay.
Lead Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful. And I will note the prior sentence is quite – it occurred to me that sentence, the one you've added, is quite broad, but I suppose the prior sentence is pretty broad too. So maybe just a final note here then, as I'd said to the prior bill and will the future bills as well, as there is a movement towards having more competitive grants, I urge Representative Bakeberg and Mr. Bartle and others to just consider, is there some grant program this could fit within, maybe with some language tweaks? How can we think about that? And then also consistent with that, kind of we don't want to have it be at the last minute we're trying to figure out this point raised by UFCW and raised by Representative Berg. So certainly would urge those conversations and considerations to be happening, because the more we can work that out early, right, we can be in a good position to say, hey, we're confident that we've got that language about family-sustaining jobs, et cetera. So both of those points I'd urge you to consider. And Representative Baker, thanks for advancing this year. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Lee Pinto. Any closing comments for the bill's author?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Mecklen, members. Good conversation. Sunday morning, I was at church, and I ran into a guy that I hadn't seen in a while, and he's a longtime employee of Lunds and Byerly's in Prior Lake. And I was telling him about this, and he said, "Oh, Ben, anything we can do to get people to realize that this is a career and a family-sustaining career." He's like, anything you can do that, that would be fantastic. And as Kendra and Andrew were testifying, that's what I heard. I heard a repeat of that conversation that I had on Sunday morning. And you think about Kendra's path. She started out as a cashier as a 15-year-old. She moved up into a shift manager at 18, then a department manager, and she's now currently an assistant store manager. So I think, the testimony we heard, but just our Main Street experience tells us that this is a very successful program, and that's why I was proud to be the author on it, and just thank Representative Frazier for his authorship as well.
Thank you for that. And again, members, this bill is being laid over for possible inclusion. So with that, thank you. The next bill we're going to be hearing is House File 498, which also will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Agbaje is, yep, she's here.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning. If you would care to share your bill with us.
Sure. Has it been moved already? Yes?
Yes, I moved it to be laid over.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, good morning, Chair and members. Today I'm here with the Urban League Twin Cities. The Urban League is a prominent organization in communities around the country, and the local affiliate started in both Minneapolis and St. Paul in the mid-1920s. The organization provided services for the African-American community, especially at a time when black people had limitations on their full place in society. Over time, the Urban League has been a source of empowerment and opportunities for people from all walks of life. Urban League Twin Cities offers information and support by helping people with housing issues, taking students on college visit trips, and training people on job skills that they need to support themselves and their families. And the Urban League has been a consistent partner in different community efforts. I myself have worked with them during my first term during the pandemic to host pop-up support clinics that assisted people with their rent help applications. So the bill before us today will provide the Urban League additional resources to continue providing job skills and training to more people in industry areas that can lead to living wage jobs. And the current program offers training for jobs that are in high demand areas like the IT sector, the healthcare sector, construction, and even green energy jobs. And so the Urban League has been around for about 100 years, and through every age, they continue to give hope to the community. With me today, I have two testifiers who can talk more about their program and their experiences with the program.
Thank you. And the first testifier looks like we have here is Joy Jones. If you would identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today on House File 498. My name is Joy Jones. I'm the Workforce Director at Urban League Twin Cities. So this bill is for the workforce appropriation for ULTC at an amount of $400,000 each over the next 2 years. Like our representative said, Urban League has been around for over 100 years, starting in 1925 in the Twin Cities. It was started by a church. They wanted to give people employment and housing opportunities. So for over 100 years, the Urban League has been the center of economic prosperity for black and brown people. Among its core services is valuing education and social order that promotes justice for all. Today, this funding will allow us to continue to build on the legacy. With your help, we can strengthen the Twin Cities region through filling jobs in high-need workforce areas, thereby supporting families in their pilgrimage to successful living. So recently, we have been shifting our focus on industry tracks within the workforce division. As we do general employment, we believe this will better establish career tracks, allowing progress in better defined ways, such as IT, construction, healthcare, and renewable energy sectors. We serve all people who come to us for help. It's one of the pillars in the community. Me personally, I've been an Urban Leaguer since I was in eighth grade. They had a Twin Cities-wide community service event that happened for all the Twin Cities student council members. So that's when I was introduced to Urban League. Now I am the workforce director. I support all of their causes. Again, I love the Urban League. It's been a great institution for a very long time. They understand the needs of the clients, their presentations, their heart's desire. We're here to lend help towards family stabilization through work and therefore community well-being. People are the backbone of this community and the lifeblood of legacy. Here to talk about his experience is Willie Williams, a client of our construction program.
Thank you. And next we have is Willie Williams. If you can identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Good morning and thank you, Mr. Chair, other committee members. How's everyone doing today? So these programs are programs that help people sustain a living, right? And everyone in general wants the same thing, to be able to work an honest day's work, come home, and not have to worry about, I don't have enough. And for me, you know, my mom and my dad were born in the 50s, and so coming from that era, they only had to have one earner to be able to achieve that. Times have changed, and now you need two incomes to support your average household. A lot of times in communities, specifically a community that I come from, no one really tells you, hey, go to this area. This is where you'll find the resources that you need to get you to that job that allows you to have a one-income household that's able to sustain and have your family thrive. That's important because after you're able to achieve that, you can have those conversations that I didn't get as a child about money management, what investments are, how to not only sustain and like keep a household, but to start thinking and planning about the next generation. And in the end, that's all we really want. That's all anybody really wants, right? Without the Minneapolis Urban League, where do I find that resource? Thank you.
Well done, Mr. Williams. Do we have any member questions? Lead Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks so much, Representative Bajaj, for bringing this forward. The Urban League does such fabulous work, and thanks to our testifiers, Mr. Williams. Yeah, you did terrific. Thank you so much. And my only comment is just, and Representative Bajaj, you may have been in the audience and heard this, is just thinking through, as we're putting our budget together, the shift towards more competitive grants. I think it's important to recognize that competitive grant, that process has not always worked well for organizations tied in deeply to community needs, and which is part of the reason, in fact, that there has been in the past many more direct appropriations, and recognizing as well that over time, I think there's an interest for a number of us just in that, and for all kinds of reasons I'm happy to get into with Representative Vajay and others. But so I just would encourage you to be thinking about, as we head into the budget process, are there grant programs that could work within the agencies we oversee, perhaps with some language changes, to make sure that programs that are really working well for communities such as the Urban League can do well in that process, because we want to make sure that they would. So just an ongoing conversation. We want to make sure to point that out as we approach the budget setting process. Thank you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Agbaje, for bringing this bill. Can you, or maybe your testifiers, talk a little bit more about the kinds of the fields and the kinds of jobs that folks get into through this training?
You can talk about the construction.
I'd love to.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Madam Greenman. So I went through a number of different programs simply because I always take the long way around. I never really know, you know, the right person to talk to that says, hey, just call this number. Some of the programs that I went through that specifically were offered through the Minneapolis Urban League, they got me in contact with a program that put me through a five-week training for the 63, which is the local masonry that's run out of their training facility in New Brighton. Day one, you show up, learn the rules, get your PPE, your personal protective equipment, and learn the rules. Don't be late, show up on time, be willing to work, and you know, you're gonna go home with a sore back. But it taught us, you know, the tools, what they are, what they're called, how to use them. And you know, the average person on the street wouldn't know what a Darby is or what a mag float is, what a bull float is. And so it teaches us the lingo, the jargon, the things that are necessary so that when you step on site that first day and that foreperson says to you, hey, Willie, I need you to go and get the mag float out of the area over by the, you're able to step into that area knowing what to do and be efficient at doing it. And so going through the programs with Ms. Norma Miller, Ms. Shannon over at the 63, they're able to provide that doorway for you to walk through. But then when you start walking through that doorway, they're going to give you the tools, again, the support, the protective equipment, the know-how. And it's programs like that that are extremely beneficial to people in my position, because I stayed at home for 5 years raising little ones, and then from there to get back into the workforce at what was assumingly going to be a deficit coming from an IT field, how do I make up that loss of time and loss of potential increase in wage? It's starting from ground zero again. So learning about this as a resource, learning about the programs that are offered through the Minneapolis Urban League has been transformative, not just for myself, but others like me.
Representative Berg?
Greenman,
sorry.
I'm happy to be confused with Representative Berg. I really appreciate that, and I feel like the best programs we hear about are the ones that create pathways, not just into a career, but into organizations like 63 or others that continue to invest in and create pathways for sort of career-long skills building, training, and elevating up. So I just appreciate, I've always appreciated the work of the Urban League, and it sounds like the kinds of connections and job training that you're talking about sound like it is both creating pathways for communities and individuals to create career-long learning and skill building. So I just really appreciate your story and the work.
And Mr. Williams, I'll tell you this much. As you get older, trim work is much easier on the back. With that, however, Representative Abaje, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the committee. I appreciate you taking the time to listen and hope that this can be included in a future budget. Thank you very much.
And members, again, this will be laid over for possible inclusion. And our next bill will be House File 1326, Representative Wogamont. And this bill will also be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Wogamont, if you'd like to proceed and tell us about your bill.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and my Sherburne County neighbor, as well as members of the committee. It's great to be back in front of labor. I really miss you guys, and I'm grateful for the time we got to spend together on the committee last biennium standing up for Minnesota's workers. I'm here today very grateful and excited to present House File 1326, which is a nonpartisan, bipartisan bill to fund the 8 Minnesota Centers for Independent Living. I'm proud and grateful that my constituents with disabilities are represented by Independent Lifestyles, as well as Minnesotans throughout central Minnesota, throughout the state. And I'm really grateful to have co-authors from both parties whose districts include other of the Centers for Independent Living. Mr. Chair, members, you might be asking yourselves, what are Centers for Independent Living? Well, let me tell you, they are one of the very few statutory nonprofits in the state of Minnesota. That means that we as a legislature have specifically charged them in state law to carry out the task of training, coaching, mentoring, and promoting independence, job skills, and self-determination for the countless people in our districts that may need assistance to become independent. Mr. Chair and members, there should be a handout in your packets that illustrates the duties and responsibilities that the centers have. And it'll really underscore for you what makes them so much different than other nonprofits that come before this committee. And I want to be clear, the centers have rigorous reporting requirements at both the state and federal level to ensure positive outcomes and accountability. How it works is the centers divide the funding equally, and they work to promote dignity and independence for so many people with disabilities that while we do our best to quantify it, it's actually difficult to quantify. One thing that I really want to highlight for you in that handout is that you'll see that these centers actually save taxpayer dollars. How? They do it by keeping people in their own homes and apartments and then ramp them into jobs rather than going into expensive institutions like assisted living centers and nursing homes. They help build wheelchair ramps so people can stay in their own homes. For example, Mr. Chair and members, the centers have quantified that 1,655 individuals with disabilities were relocated or otherwise moved from or prevented from entering long-term care institutions in the last budget cycle alone. To put that in perspective, the cost range for just those individuals would be a savings of $106 million to $254 million. Again, let me repeat that. A savings of $106 million to $254 million. That's either a cost saved from family checkbooks and or dollars saved in medical assistance, Medicare, Minnesota counties, or other cost providers when someone enters a long-term care institution. In closing, for my opening remarks, Mr. Chair, I just want to lay out what the bill does. It provides the centers with their original base funding from the last budget cycle of $3,011,000 each year, plus the $4 million one-time dollars that were allocated each year from the last biennium to be made permanent. What will we do with those dollars? We'll provide reliable staff, job coaches, skill providers, and others that can provide for independence for our constituents with disabilities and help move them toward true job and life independence. And it will save our state even more money. This bill matches up with some federal dollars and is allocated through the vocational rehabilitation area at DEED. Mr. Chair and members, the more that we can do to prevent people from entering high-cost institutions, the more we can do to help them enter the job market, live in their own homes, it's going to be better for families, our economy, and our state budget. So, Mr. Chair, that's what the bill does. That's why I'm bringing it forward. And I have with me today two outstanding examples of success stories from different parts of the state that will share stories of how the Centers for Independent Living changed lives in miraculous ways. And, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I will first turn it over to Jesse Gomez, the director of the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living, to add to my introduction before we have our two witnesses today. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And, Mr. Gomez, if you would identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolgamont. I'm Jesse Bethke Gomez. I'm the executive director of Metropolitan Center for Independent Living, located in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'm so excited to be here with you today to talk about our eight centers for independent living. We have many of our eight centers who are here today from Hibbing, Minnesota, from Marshall, Minnesota, to St. Cloud, Minnesota, are here with us today. Access North from Hibbing, Minnesota Freedom Resource Center from Moorhead, Minnesota Independent Lifestyles from Sauk Rapids, Minnesota Operations Resource Center for Independent Living from East Grand Forks, MCEL from St. Paul, Southeastern Minnesota Center for Independent Living from Rochester, our Minnesota Southwestern Center for Independent Living from Marshall, Minnesota Smiles Center for Independent Living. As Representative Wolgamott said, we are a statutory nonprofit and we're also written into the Workforce Innovations and Opportunity Act. What does that mean? That means rigor, that means oversight, that means vocational rehabilitation services serves as our state designated entity. So we have rigor in the review of our centers. I also want to mention that we are very, very grateful to your investment for that one-time gift and also for your investment, the one-time funds, and also our ongoing support. The Centers for Independent Living during the pandemic were there. We are essential community providers, and I'm excited to share with you some examples of your investment with our centers. Independent Lifestyles, with these funds, we're able to increase their employment program with Bright Light Creations that looks at hiring and training with people with disabilities in a competitive employment environment. I'm excited to share with you that the Center for Independent Living in Northeastern Minnesota, Access North, has done some phenomenal work strengthening their organization, being able to build more ramps to reach more people and to do some phenomenal things. And over their last 40th anniversary, they have served over 80,000 people in the state of Minnesota. We're very excited about what they've done, too. I want to also share with you as an example, looking at Freedom Resource Center for Independent Living. They're stronger. They're serving more people. And then lastly, let me also say that for Metropolitan Center for Independent Living, our agencies are, by federal law, 50% of our employees must be people with disabilities. And MCIL, 65% of our employees are people with disabilities. We are a high-performance organization, and 65% of our people are people with disabilities. But your funds helped us with this. Over the last 10 years, we've seen a 300% increase in our healthcare coverage. When we went to go bid, there were healthcare firms that would not even allow us to bid. We were faced with severe crisis, severe layoffs. And I can share with you that thanks to your investment in us, we're able to find actually new healthcare coverage, lower healthcare coverage, innovative healthcare coverage, making certain that we manage that cost for the agency, manage that cost for our employees. And at the same time, we literally doubled the number of people that we have helped to contribute towards all of our Centers for Independent Living, having over, in total, 1,655 people moving from institutional care settings and into the community. In short, your investment in our centers help us to stabilize people, help us to make certain that there's a social connectedness, and that helps us to create vibrant communities throughout all of the 87 counties and in your cities as well. And what does that mean for us? That means a sustainable economic future. So on behalf of our Centers for Independent Living, we thank you for that investment and our ability to make a difference in the lives and advance independently for people with disabilities in so many phenomenal ways. And after that, Representative Wogomot, I'll turn it over to our invited speakers who have some phenomenal stories to share with you as well.
And if the two testifiers, if you would like to take your turns, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Okay, I can go first. My name is Carol LaFleur. I'm from Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Committee Chair and committee members, I would like to address you today because as a youth, I grew up in a household that was very abusive. The house was blown up. I ended up on the street, homeless and an addict. I engaged in a domestic violence relationship in 1990. I ended up in a hospital because I was anorexic and very sick, mentally sick and physically sick. I went through every psychiatric unit in the state of Minnesota, two nursing home stays, a group home stay, a stay at a Wilmer Regional Treatment Center, and the last stay was a Noco Regional Treatment Center. Now think of those dollar signs from 1990 to 1997 that you spent on me being contained in these facilities. January 1997, I called the Capitol because we were being abused at the Noco Regional Treatment Center. State Representative Bill Haas took my call, whom I did not know. He was coming to the facility. Because he was coming, I got put in a 7-point restraint chair. I will never forget that and was told not to tell him what happened. I was released January 21st, 1997, back to my home. Mind you, from all my disabilities being anorexic and being mentally unstable at that time due to domestic violence, I was in a wheelchair 15 years. I went home in a wheelchair due to the assistance of Bill Haas. I gained the case management services. However, I was assigned multiple agencies, but these agencies would send people out, but they did nothing for me. They didn't garner the fact that I had dreams, I had goals, and I had aspirations. I stayed in one room in my home. I was agoraphobic. I only went to the hospital if it was by ambulance, literally. So, again, you're continuing to spend all this money, and you're not getting no return for the money you're spending, right? Eventually, I was assigned to Metropolitan Center for Independent Living. I was assigned a staff member who was well-trained, who seen me as an individual who had goals, who had dreams, who had aspirations, who wanted to do something with their future. She pushed me. She pushed me hard. We fought. I swore. She cussed. She didn't cuss. I cussed. The thing was, though, staying in the home was hard, and slowly her and two other staff members who worked with me were able to take me out in the community, with what the doctors could not have done, and I was able to start gaining some independence back that way. And then I seen a commercial for college, and I said, oh, I want to do that. And they took me there, but I was in a wheelchair. I went to North Hennepin Community College, started in 2005, graduated in 2011. Yes, mainly in a scooter and a wheelchair, but I did it, right? After that, I went on to law enforcement school with the assistance of my staff member from MCIL. I graduated from law enforcement school in 2014 at the top of my class, class speaker, summa cum laude, outstanding undergraduate. 2015, I was hired from Metropolitan Council. I currently work for Metro Transit Police Department, have been there 10 years in May. I'm the community outreach coordinator. I'm Native American liaison, and I work on the homeless action team, working with individuals with disabilities, mental illness, and addiction on our systems. So they have taken me from being that person that was a throwaway according to society and according to the state hospitals and these nursing home and group home to someone who's now walking, working, and paying it forward for others, right? But not only did they change my life, the thing that is, I had children when I was addicted, right? So my kids have disabilities. But because of the skills they gave me, my children are active members of society. So when you changed my trajectory, I was able to change their trajectory. And the services, when I work on the homeless action team, when I'm working with these clients, I'm able to help change their trajectory. Investing in this program is the best thing we can do. This is so important to me because look at me now. I'm alive when the doctors told my family I would be dead. And I'm not. So thank you for listening to my testimony. And please support this.
And Mr. Schneider, if you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is John Schneider. I'd like to tell you my story. I was homeless. I was living in a hunting blind. I purchased this hunting blind with the intention of outdoor activities with my son. I found myself living in it. I was eating squirrels out of the wilderness. I was doing what I can to survive. You see, I served honorably in the Marines for 10 years. I was trained as a scout sniper. When I got out, I had a hard time transitioning into a civilian life. And I look back on that now and wonder, how could I have gone from the Marine corporal that I was to, I don't want to say failing, to falling? You see, in the military, I almost want to tell you that's about the easiest job you'll ever get. You never have to make a decision. You're told what to do, when to do it, every minute of your life. So I had a really hard time transitioning into this civilian life. I didn't have these skills to live independently with that guidance or support not being there anymore. And I was struggling with my PTSD. I was struggling with epilepsy. Then one day, I get a phone call from a gentleman who said he's from a center for independent living. And I had reached out to quite a few places, and I kind of was expecting to wait in a big line or maybe have a door closed in front of me again. But this gentleman simply wanted to know what my needs were, and he wanted to talk with me. He fed me. And this was about the time I was at the end of my rope. I had little faith in the system or myself any longer. My needs and issues, the first thing that we accomplished was housing. I got my own housing. I got my own apartment, along with energy assistance, some donated furnishings, kitchen items, and some cooking skills that I didn't have. I didn't learn those in the military. They give you an MRE to eat. So over time, this gentleman advocated for me, which was really, really needed. I was very nervous. I was breaking down every time I got in front of somebody. Over time, I've learned to advocate for myself, to get the medical treatment I needed, to file for Social Security disability. You see, the Marine Corps taught me the skills to save my life. But the Minnesota Center for Independent Living, they taught me the skills to live my life. The most important thing I got back was my family. My son now lives with me. My mother once again respects me. I once again respect myself. Now, I've moved on for my education. I've earned my associate's degree. I graduated with 4.0. Went further and pursued my bachelor's science. Graduated with 4.0 as well.
Wow.
Currently, I speak on the dangers of drugs and alcohol to the minors in the community. I moved into a house of my own and I own my own reliable vehicle. I have the honor of leading my tribe's ceremonial traditions as the Eagle Staff Carrier. So that's me leading the entire tribe. I went from homeless to leading my people. I've also been promoted to Commander of American Legion post 2001. I consider myself a productive member of society once again. I do owe Access North a deep debt of gratitude. I had a huge mountain of issues to overcome. And the Center for Independent Living broke that overwhelming mountain down into small, manageable steps that I can achieve. In closing, I ask you to please support our legislative request to continue to fund the previous $8 million appropriation for the MACIL, the 8 Centers for Independent Living, and add this permanently to the base funding. I want to thank this committee and the Center for Independent Living for being here today. Thank you.
That was quite a story. Do we have any member questions? Lead Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. Looking to see if anybody else does. Yeah, totally agreed about the testifiers. Was there another member that was going to say something? I wasn't sure. Okay. Appreciate to both of you just such powerful stories. Mr. Schneider, thank you for your service to our country. And to both of you, just really inspiring to have you share that with us. I had one question that maybe I had an exchange with our phenomenal fiscal analyst, Ms. Eng, to just talk about, just remind me, if you can, or clarify what the current base funding is for the coming biennium for the Center for Independent Living, just as we're thinking through our budgets, if you can.
Mr. Yep. Chair and Representative Pinto, the base budget is $6 million for the fiscal year 26-27 biennium.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Pinto. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, that's helpful. And so $6 million over the biennium, this would be going to $14 million. And then my understanding is that that's sort of matching the amount that had been received this in one-time funding, so trying to just make sure there's not a cut from last biennium to this one. Okay, good. Getting a thumbs up from Representative Wolgamott. That's great. And then maybe just I'll direct the attention of members then. Although these are nonprofits, this is, I think, a great example of a grant program that is sort of established. If you look at the statute that we've been given, it's established, I think, partly under federal law, but these organizations apply for funds. There's sort of different oversight than there is if we sort of named individual nonprofits. And so I think this is a great example of a grant program that is kind of overseen in a different way than just we sort of identify a particular organization, the money goes to it. Instead, this has been set up as a structure and one that it sure sounds like is working really, really well. So Representative Wolgamott, thanks for bringing it forward and to all of you for your work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Mueller. Oh. No further questions from members. Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you again, Chair Meckland and members of the committee for the opportunity to present House File 1326. In closing, I first really want to thank our testifiers today for your powerful story. We are so impressed by your courage and the success in your journey, and you sharing that story with us today will be an inspiration for countless here for us at the legislature and countless Minnesotans throughout the state. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, you've heard it from these testifiers. You can see in your handout the success that Centers for Independent Living has had in having the backs of all of our constituents from all abilities, from all walks of life. The success that they've had and the cost savings to our state is off the charts. And I urge you, as you're putting together your budget, this is such a good investment for the people of our state, for our budget. And I ask you with all my heart to include this appropriation for the Centers for Independent Living. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for your consideration.
Thank you. And again, members, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. And, you know, members, I think we heard a lot of good stories today, a lot of good career paths out there and a lot of inspiring stories. So tomorrow we'll be meeting to take up House File 23 and House File 1355, and we will be having a presentation from the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. And with that, we are adjourned.